Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey and Chad here, your hosts for this weekend show. Boy, oh boy, we're going to be talking a lot about precious metals, as we have been over the last few weeks and even few months. Now with the big question of correction, volatility, how to trade it, how to view it, no one has these answers, but all we can do is get some of our, I think even more so, our more generalist commentators to share how they're viewing the precious metals, because let's face it, a lot of new investors have come into the market, and now we need to figure out just their willingness to hold through some of this crazy volatility. Just as a note, please go through our website, podcast, YouTube channel, just search The KE Report to listen to all our daily editorials covering these volatile markets and company updates from throughout the week. Still a lot of companies out there doing a lot of work that you need to be paying attention to. Let's get into this weekend show, kicking off the show with Mike Larson. Mike is the editor-in-chief at Money Show. Mike, we've been even talking a whole lot about precious metals because they've been coming up at some of the Money Show conferences this week, along with the tail end of last week. Big volatility in precious metals in terms of big down days and also some pretty big rebound days as well. But Mike, give us your thoughts on the volatility and the correction that a lot of people were calling for in precious metals this week.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, holy cow, it's funny. I mean, you've been in this business for a long time. You know that precious metals volatility relative to equities is pretty, you know, it's usually nowhere near in terms of the intensity. You don't have precious metals, gold and so on. I mean, silver sometimes can get really volatile, but you don't see gold tend to trade or fly around like an AI stock does. But you know, in the last several weeks, we've just seen, as gold had been ripping higher, silver had been surging higher, you know, things like, I actually did a chart for a piece that compared the gold volatility index, GVZ, to the VIX, the, you know, obviously the S&P volatility index. And it's crazy that the gold volatility index as of the other day, earlier this week, was up, what, 99% on the year or something, whereas the equity volatility index was up 2% year to date. That kind of gives you a window into the amount of volatility we saw introduced into the precious metals market. As a matter of fact, the gold volatility index tagged 33, which was the highest going all the way back to March of 22. So, you know, as the run-up has increased, as the moves have gotten bigger, I mean, you know, a $100 move in gold isn't what it used to be in terms of percentage terms, given that the price is a lot higher than it was a few years ago. But that's still a big number. And you know, at one point, we had gold up like $175, and then, you know, down $230 some odd an ounce. I mean, those kinds of moves. And silver, I think, was down 9%, one of the worst moves since, what was it, since 2011 or something like that. So this kind of stuff going on is absolutely not normal, but, you know, it's just one of those things that I think speaks to the kind of market that we're in, and I think also just the kind of environment where you get to the tail end of a move where everybody wants in, and that can just lead to just crazy action. So I think that's what you're seeing here. You know, it kind of reminds me of just a more extreme version of what we saw back in March and April when the last leg of the move up in gold was happening. I mean, let's remember, you know, it wasn't too long before, again, from a lower price level, that gold was surging back in March and April, and it looked like a big move at the time. Then we kind of had a blow off top and reversal. And what did gold do? It sat around doing nothing for months on end, but it didn't give back those gains. I say it sat around doing nothing, but it was basically consolidating the prior run up. And then what happened in August, after that consolidation was over, bam, we took off again. So, you know, I don't want to sit here and tell you that this is the end of the run. I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's not something to be concerned about or at least pay attention to. It's a big enough move. It comes after a big enough move that, you know, it would be only natural for this to lead to probably a long consolidation, you know, maybe multi-week, if not multi-month. So, I think that if you're trading it, you know, as a long-term investor, I should say, I mean, is there much you do here? I don't think so. I don't think this is the end of the bull run in metals. If you're a trader, though, and you're looking to, you know, profit on short-term pullbacks, you're probably going to see more of this. You probably see some weakness for a little while. You know, and that would obviously apply not just to the metals themselves, but the equities that track them. So It does kind of smack as a maybe a short to intermediate term top, even as, again, I don't think this is the end of the bull run.
Well, Mike, I'd be curious, since you do talk to such a range of different types of investors at the Money Show, and you have kind of a generalist attraction because you cover so many different sectors at the show. A lot of them probably just got animated more recently with precious metals because it's in the headlines and they saw the price breakouts and they saw the stocks doing well. And, you know, the first, second, and third quarter, it's been leading the charge as far as performance compared to a lot of other market sectors. What do you think the temperament is for those investors, those people that maybe just found the sector more recently? I guess maybe if they came from tech or from biotech or something else, the volatility may not scare them. For us as traditional precious metals, it's a little wild to see. But what do you think their temperament is as far as holding through the volatility or getting attracted to a different shiny object?
Look, you probably got pulled some weak hands in recently. I mean, I kind of joke in my presentation at the Orlando Money Show to kick things off last week. I had one slide about just kind of the fundamental factors I think aligned for gold, and you know why I still like the bull market. And then I put a slide up that had a screen grab from Good Morning America talking about why you should maybe invest in gold. You know, they led with that story. I want to say it was a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. Now, when Good Morning America is covering a move in gold, I mean, that's not, you know, that's one of those things that, like, again, it's not quantitative analysis at all. It's pure going kind of like feelings or sentiment or what anecdotal information, but that's not normal, right? So I think that, you know, it's not surprising that we've seen, after that kind of attention and especially the sort of parabolic nature of the move more recently, that you're seeing the kind of reversal here. And, you know, it's all about leverage, right? I mean, commodities markets, whether it's gold, whether it's silver, especially being kind of the junior metal to gold. I mean, you know, you can get taken out in a box if you're not really careful in terms of what you're trading and how much leverage you're using and so on. So if you have some people that were coming in and maybe, you know, trading this the way they would trade previously, extremely volatile assets, whether it's some of the junior cryptos or whether it's AI stocks or whatever, yeah, I mean, some of those people are probably getting smacked over the head here. So it's just one of those things where, again, if you're a longer-term holder, you know, I don't say you ignore it, but you do say, I do think that it probably smacks of, again, more than just a 1 or 2 day thing. There's enough sort of volatility that's happened, two-way volatility, big moves, you know, sentiment-based things and other things I've looked at that have just suggested this may, you know, this is going to be something that has to be digested probably for a longer period of time than anything we've seen since April. So I would just, you know, keep that in mind. It's probably it's probably more than just something that's going to be over in a day or two and we'll be, you know, at $5,000 next week or something like that, you know?
This brings up, I think, a very important topic. Something that we did chat about during the week is that gold and silver were a momentum trade, and the stocks were a momentum trade that brings in a different type of investor. How quickly does momentum get lost? How quickly do those people bail? What do you how do you even analyze momentum now when you see this volatility that isn't to all-time highs day after day?
Listen, I think it's just something that you have to be very cognizant of as a trader, what you're, you know, how you're trading this market, what kind of leverage you're using, what kind of stops you're using, how much, you know, leeway you're going to give a position to move against you and so on. I think you have to, you know, as it goes from being sort of a plodding, longer term, steady bull run to something that starts getting parabolic in nature, I think, yes, you do have to sort of, you know, put your trader hat on and start trading it like it's, you know, some of this crazy moves you see in crypto or some, especially in silver. I mean, you know, gold still, I think, is an asset that has a larger, stable ownership base, whether it's central banks, whether it's institutions and so on. So, you know, that I think you're going to see more stability clearly in gold than something like silver, which can become a little bit more of a plaything towards the tail end of a move, which is obviously what we saw. But in either case, I think you definitely just have to approach this as, look, whatever I thought about this move, you know, a month ago, 2 months ago, it did tend to get parabolic. It did have a, you know, a couple days of extreme volatility to the upside, downside again. And that's the kind of stuff that you see when you're probably at the end of a move for a short to intermediate term. So, you know, it'd be great if this makes a liar out of me and gold's at $5,000 by mid-November. But I don't really see that happening. I think this is enough that it's going to probably be something that, you know, maybe we chop even through the end of the year, frankly.
I'm also curious, Mike, at your shows, the difference between, as you lined out, an investor and a trader. Because a lot of people say, oh, I'm a long-term investor in this sector, whatever sector it is. It could be tech, it could be precious metals. If we keep it to the precious metals discussion, they say they're long-term. Then the first sign of weakness, they're like, hey, should I sell everything? So how do you deal with people that claim to be long-term investors and panic at the first sign of trouble?
I think you really gotta, be honest with yourself. If you're involved in this market, and like you said, I mean, we're talking in the context of precious metals, but it would apply the same if you were talking about other hot sectors in the market, which periodically have been everything from Mag 7 to AI to, Beanie Babies for that, for that matter. I mean, you have to be honest with yourself, right? Don't, if you were truly trading this market, don't all of a sudden say, oh, I'm a long-term investor now as the position goes against you. Meaning, if you have high leverage, you're trading futures options, multi-X ETFs, long or short, and you get a move against you that when you start to see this kind of magnitude of movement, don't lie to yourself and say, don't let a trade turn into a long-term investment. On the flip side, if you're a long-term investor, you've made a lot, maybe on a bounce, you start lightening up on even some of your long-term positions just a little bit, And again, it depends where your cost basis is. I mean, I'm lucky enough personally, and I think that, people have followed what we've said on this show and what I've said on money shows, are have been in for a long time and have been sitting on huge profits. And I think, you don't want to just let it all go. I mean, if you get nervous by this kind of volatility and, you start finding yourself checking your phone or whatever from dinner and stuff, then you have to ask yourself, do I really have sort of the, the steely-eyed nerve to ride out this volatility, or would I feel better if I sold, I don't know, 5% of my holdings or 10%, just whatever I need to find peace of mind. If you're a long-term investor and you're now starting to behave like a trader, just like if you're a trader and now you're saying you're going to be a long-term investor, that's probably, those are warning flags in either way. So just make sure you understand what kind of buyer you are, what kind of owner or holder you are, and be honest with yourself and make adjustments that, allow you to continue on and participate.
Yeah, have a plan. Too many people don't have a plan. But as you said, don't change your narrative either. I love that. If you're a trader, don't say you're long term because it went against you. Get out and make a different trade. Now, one other thing I just want to ask, is it ironic in your eye here, Mike, that silver, when it finally broke over $50 that everyone was waiting for, as gold just kept hitting new all-time highs, is it ironic that now is when we start to see this correction?
It'll be interesting. You can only kind of look at maybe the longer term implication in hindsight here. I think that, again, if I as long as I'm not over leveraged, which I'm not, but I mean, as long as I, meaning a listener out there, is not over leveraged, you get this kind of pullback and you get smacked and you break that $50 to the downside. Now you see, as you pull back to various moving averages, which have, obviously gotten steeper over time, as you pull back to different levels, see how it behaves at those levels. If it just knifes through it like a, like it's not even, there's no support, then that's a little more worrisome versus if, even at short and then slightly longer term support levels, we base. So I think a lot, that's going to say a lot. I mean, it's hard to be patient. I get it. You see a 9% decline in silver futures, and you're like, oh my God, running around with my hair on fire. But I think if you can be a little patient, if you're in the right kind of investments, and again, when it comes to leverage and all that stuff, as long, you can be a little more patient with it, give this pullback a little bit of time and see how does silver behave at 48, 49, 47 as it kind of pulls back. Longer term moving averages are all the way down in kind of the mid 40s. So, and I should say short to intermediate term moving averages are down there. That's a sizable percentage move. But again, when you think about an asset that's was up, what, 90% year to date or something, I mean, it's not quite as big a move when you look at it in that context. So just, again, my best advice and is just be cognizant of what your goal was going into this market and make sure your actions are consistent with your goal and your holding periods and your leverage and everything else.
Well, Mike, I think another interesting topic is when you go into a trade in any sector, again, we'll keep it to the precious metals. The point of it is to make money. You're an investor. So whether that's long term or short term, you want to make more than you put in. You don't want to lose money. But the other thing is, you need to have an exit strategy for eventually when you ring the register. When you see a cycle where it played out textbook. Producers ran, then the mid-tiers, then the developers, then eventually the juniors. Gold ran first, then silver. You see the junior ETFs taking over the senior ETFs. When all of those things have played out, and it seems like later cycle, at what point is the ride over? And I'm not saying the precious metals ride is over, but I'm saying when you're placing a trade Is it something where you get out in stages personally or when you talk to people, or is it something where you just say, hey, I'm ringing the register, the trade has played out like I better than I hoped for, and I'm moving on to another sector? How do you look at those parts of it, the exit strategy?
Sure. I mean, I think from a longer term perspective, I mean, kind of me personally, I just sort of, and you know, what I advise is just see how things behave on a pullback. You know, see how after this happens, after some of the dust settles of the day-to-day volatility, you know, are you finding support at these levels? Is it kind of like April where we pull back, but we don't give up too much percentage-wise from the gain? We find support and then we sort of chop in a sideways pattern. You know, that would be ultimately the best outcome if you're still a long-term bull. If I see things just fall, not, you know, clipping through support and, you know, giving back 10%, 15% turns into maybe 20%, then you got to start ask, is this something that's going to last even longer? I mean, I don't, you know, the short answer is you don't know until you know. And I think as long as you're in the right instruments, and if you're a long-term bull, you can be patient and see what happens. You know, I think one of the things I'll be watching is the dollar, is how other assets behave here, is what happens with interest rates and so on, to see if some of the other long-term forces that have been underlying this move for months and months on end start to change. I don't really see that. I see more of just, you know, momentum ran out, you know, and just like with any high momentum move that's way out over its skis, this is what happens. But if we start seeing other things fall into place, the fiscal government gets some discipline, interest rates start, you know, going up versus down, the dollar really starts stabilizing and turning higher and taking out overhead resistance on the DXY, things like that, then that would where it'd be like, okay, this is something that's going to be multi-month, maybe even multi-quarter. So you're going to take 30% of your gold holdings off the table instead of maybe 5% just to make it, yourself sleep better at night. That's sort of how I'd look at it. I mean, again, I don't have the answer. We don't have the answer. Nobody listening to this has the answer, but I think you kind of have to give it a little bit of time just to see how it unfolds.
That is such a good comment, Mike. And again, it's why I said on the intro, no one knows where this is going. But as you just said, we can look at some other potentially correlated markets and maybe get a feel for if something truly longer term has changed. It's also just interesting to see this volatility really without any significant news, or I don't think significant news that really caused this sell-off or trade. But there was another momentum market in the minerals and metals with the critical minerals. That was a little bit more news-based with how much the U.S. government was investing in companies. And also this week, the news that the U.S. and Australia have come to some sort of an agreement for critical mineral supply. This definitely doesn't take China out of the equation since they are such a huge player in critical minerals. But the critical mineral stocks, they went almost tenfold in a matter of a month, and now they're correcting. Have you guys been talking much about critical minerals at the money shows?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Just as you're talking, I'm pulling up my charts like US Antimony and so on, and you know, MP Materials, some of those names you're talking about. I mean, yeah, let's be honest. People have been looking for other ways to, you know, other parts of the metals market to get involved in, other things where sort of Team USA is at your back, and some of the things that have been, you know, going on there in terms of, you know, investing, you know, locking arms with the government to invest. It sounds kind of weird to say that as a bullish thing, but you know. He's got Uncle Sam has pretty deep pockets, so if he's buying something, then you know maybe it's something I want to get involved with as well, regardless of the longer term kind of, I don't know, whatever you want to call it as a result of that. But yeah, I think people are talking about it, people are looking at it, people know that the US wants to sort of, you know, try and position itself in a better place on the global stage vis-a-vis China and so on. So, but again, all I will say is like again, as I'm looking at the chart, United States antimony was trading at, let's see, about $5 in mid-September. It surged to, what do we got, 19 and a half bucks just the other day, October 14th. Now it's at, you know, 11 and change. What, or when I say now, I mean as I'm looking at it on my screen, those kinds of things, you know, be honest with yourself. If you're trading this stuff, understand you may be trade. I mean, if you're trading it actively, you're looking to run up on a momentum thing, there's been enough of a move that this is probably going to be dead money for a while, maybe, you know? I mean, like a chart like that longer term sure looks like it's one of those things that had a big blow off move, and now it's gonna, you know, need a long time to digest that. And, you know, that's just picking on one stock, but I think if I looked at almost anything in the sector, it would be relatively similar. So, you know, just understand what you're buying, what you own, what you got into it for in the first place. And if you got into it for a hot trade to ride the momentum, guess what? You want to get out of it because it's probably losing that momentum. If you bought this as a long-term hold, you can handle the kind of volatility that comes with it, then you're not going to want to freak out over a move like this. You'd probably just say, I mean, if you bought some at five and you're at $11 still, lighten up if it makes you feel better. I mean, it's still more than a double. So don't be crazy greedy. Do the smart things you would do, whether it was U.S. antimony or, some internet stock in the late 1980s or 90s. I mean, make sure you're just honest with yourself. Do the right thing as a trader or investor based on what you went into the trade or investment for in the first place.
Well, Mike, just to follow up on the critical minerals, one of the things that's interesting is how much news it's getting from this administration, whether it be in the Big Beautiful Bill, some of the parts designated for critical minerals, or in the Biden administration with the Inflation Reduction Act. There was a lot of stuff in there about critical minerals, but you're also seeing executive orders. And it makes me, this whole thing makes me think about what happened with uranium and nuclear stocks when DeepSeek came out, torpedoed the sector. AI stocks are down, energy stocks are down, but then the Trump administration comes out with four executive orders, uranium stocks, nuclear stocks shoot back up. That's what's been happening with rare earths. That's what's been happening with antimony. That's what's been happening with tungsten and all these critical minerals. Do you think it's something where the news flow from the administration could bail out even pullbacks, even in a volatile market?
We'd have to see what the magnitude of the news is. I mean, let's be honest, in the Trump administration, there's tape bombs that come up. I mean, that's the term, you've probably heard it before. I mean, you can look it back at what happened with copper, with the whole futures market there on the tariff, no tariff move, huge move up, then big, give up of those. But like, all right, you mentioned uranium, so I just threw up Cameco on my screen. Now here's an interesting chart, right? Cameco went from what, down in the 30s back in April, ran all the way up the other day to almost $100, pulled back to almost $80, and now it's trying to base at a previous level of support. It broke out, pulled back to support. It'll be interesting to see kind of how it behaves here. This would be a prime example. Actually, this is a great chart that I put on there just to kind of get a sense for how do these, that's obviously Cameco is not one of these little tiny junior miners, explorers, what have you. It's one of the big behemoths in the sector that represents sort of the benchmark for uranium. So how does it behave here? Same thing I would say if you looked at some of the big gold stocks or the big copper stocks and so on. Look at how the megas are handling this thing. Newmont pulling back to support. How does it handle this first real test of the strength of the uptrend? That's what I'd kind of be looking at, because if you see these names do what they did in April, which is after the big run-up, chop sideways in sort of a bull flag type pattern for several weeks, and then find a base, and that base allows them to turn back up again, great. Then, we're fine. If this stuff just sort of all falls out of bed, all I can do is counsel patience, because if you're a long-term holder in this, you don't have the answer. I don't have the answer. Nobody listening to this has the answer. But the behavior on the pullback will tell you a lot, and I think that's true for some of the mega companies in the sector, and that's probably where I'd keep my eyes on.
Mike, we're going to wrap it up here. We're out of time for the weekend show, or at least the first two segments. But boy, oh boy, I think this is probably the most insightful comments we've gotten all week on this volatility and pullback and how to trade these markets and what to look for in these markets. Because you're right, no one knows where this is going. We can all have kind of our longer term thesis, but we do need to sometimes change that thesis if needed, but not on the back of just a couple trading days or even 1 week of trading. This is going to take time to figure out what this top looks like, if it's short term, if it's long term, or if it truly is a top or just a trading opportunity, but many things that you've given us that we should look for. So thank you very much for that. Again, Mike Larson, editor-in-chief at Money Show. Mike, thanks for your time on this weekend show. And everyone, stick around. We're going to be right back, continuing to get some comments on how to trade these markets.
Thanks for having me. Take care, guys.
Al Korlin's firm, AB Korlin and Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Korlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.